I know you like that.
How long you been back, man?
Welcome into the Saturday show, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this Saturday morning. I'm Jay Catch, joined as always by Michelle Bodkin. Michelle, what is up?
Just hanging out on a Saturday, man.
Well, that's...
I'm still, I think, trying to wake up a little, honestly.
It's one of those things, yeah. Saturday mornings, you're kind of like...
Saturday mornings in the winter. Oh, let's be clear on that. Like, I'm usually a lot chipper, a lot more chipper in the summertime because it's warm and
I think
sunny.
Most people are like
and
that.
Yeah. So weather and time of year definitely make a difference on that.
Seasonal affective disorder is what they call it, and like sad or whatever they call that.
I wouldn't say I'm.
I know. I'm just, but they say
that,
like,
yeah. That people experience that.
It
yeah.
throws them off. I guess is the biggest thing, but nonetheless. All right, so we got a lot to cover on today's show. We've got transfer portal, NFL draft, bowl season, NBA, Utah Jazz, NFL. We got the whole slew of things to talk about.
Yeah.
So let's get today's show started. Michelle, what was the highlight of your week?
This was another kind of just quiet, uneventful week. So you know what? I will just kind of take that. I finished kind of getting everything ready to go for the bowl game in a couple of weeks. So you know what? That's a nice thing to like check off my list.
Sure. Yeah. I agree with you on that. Christian, producing for us today. Christian, you got a highlight?
Similar to Michelle, kind of low key this week, mm-hmm. but I'll go with checking something off of my list. I wrapped up Christmas shopping.
Yes.
Hold on. Christian, you're done?
Yeah. I'm wow. a big Black Friday guy, so
well,
I want
to
take care
you.
Of business. You know, Christmas is what, 2 weeks,
yeah.
2.5 weeks out, so I can rest easy knowing that I don't have to worry about anything last minute. I've got everything all in order, so I finished that up this week,
way
and I was
go.
Like, heck yeah. Like, it's a good feeling knowing I don't, you know, last minute, like, freaking out about what do I get?
Dude, you props know? To you, man.
Like, I was going to say, I'm basically done. I have to just go get one last thing, and the ironic thing is that was the gift idea that I thought of first. I just have not gone and taken care of it yet.
Fair enough.
So it's the last to be purchased, uh-huh. but it was the first one that I thought of.
Okay. Well, hey, nothing wrong with that. You guys, I'm probably, wow, 70-ish% done. There's a couple of things I still need to get, and I'm not like you. You have yourself already in mind.
Yeah,
I've just got to figure out what it is.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
The nice part is the big stuff seems to be done, and Mrs. Hatch helps in a myriad of ways with this. Like she's the queen of. She's like, hey, I want this, so I'm like, okay, I'll go get that, or she'll just buy and say, hey, you're giving this to me for Christmas.
Whoa.
Okay, whatever.
Okay, Mrs. Hatch.
She just like great, that works for me.
Teamwork so, makes the dream work.
I know, makes my life. A lot easier when it's like that. There's no doubt about it. So, highlight of my week, real quick. Little man Landon's number three. He's mm-hmm. doing really, really well, and he is starting to figure out how to smile at people.
Aww.
So it's always fun. Like little 2.5 months now. It's fun to actually because when he's first born, he kind of just lays there and kind of
yeah,
stares at
yeah.
you. But now he's starting to smile and makes it a lot more fun.
So, aww.
Yeah. Good times.
We love baby smiles.
I'm totally a dad. I know. I get it. But nonetheless. all right. So, Michelle, I'm going to give you a number between 1 and 5. That's where we're going to start today's show. I got 5 different topics. I feel we can start today. So what number between 1 and 5 do you want to start with?
Let's go with number 3.
Number 3. All right. That's Sione Vaki.
Okay.
So last night, Sione Vaki, I guess we also can send this out to Cole Bishop as well.
Yeah,
so Utah's star safeties, both of them announcing they're headed to the NFL draft.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in some ways on the Vaki front, it's a little bit of a surprise because there's so much rumor about him with NIL,
mm-hmm.
potentially transfer portal. But he just like supplants all of it and says, you know what I'm doing? I'm going pro.
Yeah.
So give me a sense of where you think things stand right now for Utah, because they have a bevy of guys who have entered the transfer portal, albeit I would say 10 plus of them are a backup variety that you're like,
mm-hmm.
okay, so be it. But where do things stand right now for Utah with regards to NFL draft announcements, transfer portal, and the like?
I think there's probably still a couple that will announce to the NFL at some point.
Well, Kyle Whittingham, some comments yesterday indicated
yeah,
as such.
Yeah. Transfer portal.
Who knows?
Who knows? I think we'll probably see a few more of the smaller, like way back up guys
mm-hmm.
leave. I'm not sure how many more are actually left at this point, but like, but I do think they're in the process of floor raising.
Sure.
I think that's really kind of the ultimate goal there. I know that they've had some interest from people. I know that people are freaking out because Kyle made a comment yesterday on our other radio station that things are a little bit tight actually with NIL for them.
Well, I can, having had conversations with people this week, yes, it is, but it's not necessarily a bad thing. I can explain that in a second.
Yeah. No, I think it's just, it's one of those things. They're Utah's in a place where they have to balance, and I think they've done a good job of making sure that they have the NIL that they kind of need. The problem is what everybody else is doing, and that's out of Utah's control, mm-hmm. you know? So I still expect Utah to do a good job with this. I trust the coaches to make good evaluations and good judgment calls in order to get in and take care of the things that they need. And I think the one important thing to remember as you're watching all this take place is that Utah is first and foremost a developmental school.
Sure.
And
yeah.
So, you know, they may not get the biggest, shiniest guys, but they will get guys that they can absolutely turn into stars and that will be ready to go and ready to play hard. I have very, very little doubt that that happens. So it's hard to watch names go and not see names coming in, but we're also kind of in the early stages of this as well. So just take a step back. It's fine. I think they'll figure it out. And like I said, I think Utah fans will ultimately be pretty pleased with the result on that.
Now, with regards to Bishop and Vaki, because both of them are all Pac-12 honorees, by the way, for the life of me, how is Cole Bishop a second team honoree?
He had a bit of a down season, but a lot of that was he was playing out of his natural position.
Impact wise, he's absolutely.
Oh, I know.
There.
Yeah, no, he absolutely is. He is for sure an impact player.
Okay, so with both of those two leaving in particular, how much of a hole does that leave for Utah in the secondary? Because those are both very, very talented players.
I mean, you know, it's always hard to replace guys like that, right? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, Utah has the next man up mentality. Mm-hmm. And I would say that safety is not one of the places that they tend to struggle finding new talent to come in. Unlike some other places where maybe they strike gold once and have a star, and it's like, that's really a case of, oh, literally, how are we going to replace this guy? But safety is a place that I think, you know, they bring in new guys. They just have an eye for it. They have a nose for it. You know, you have Nate Ritchie sitting in the wings.
He's very easy. Like, you think, okay, he moves into the lineup.
He's no slouch. I know that they're high on Jonathan Hall, which I think a lot of people forget about him. He was a freshman that signed last year. And I think someone else that kind of gets forgotten about is the USC transfer, Britton Allen, that came in.
Okay.
If USC wanted him, he probably has something to work with. So, and then, you know, it's again, who knows who they bring in, whether it's a new high school guy, whether it's a guy from the transfer portal, you know, will it look exactly the same or will there be some growing pains? There might be. But I also expect whoever fills those roles will probably figure it out pretty quick too.
Now, the other thing about this is I'm just talking with people around it. They're wondering, okay, why in the world wouldn't guys like Cole Bishop, Sione Vaki, I can extend that out also, Devon Vele, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't they want to run it back for another year? And the conversation I've been having, I'm gonna get your thought on this. I've been saying, here's the thing: these guys got to capitalize on opportunities. Mm-hmm. The NFL shelf life, no matter how you perceive it to be, is relatively short.
Mm-hmm.
Your chance to maximize your earnings, set yourself up for your future, whatever, you got to capitalize on that. So, is there concern that not enough guys are wanting to run it back in your mind, Michelle, or is it just pretty natural? These guys have done what they need to do, and they're going to cash in on what they've accomplished in their collegiate careers.
Yeah, you know what? I honestly don't think these are all guys that really kind of, for one reason or another, mm-hmm. should go and pursue that. You know, Devon kind of has his age going against him. He's been at Utah since 2019. So, I mean, he's been there a good long time. And at this point, you know, you're starting to risk getting injured and then nobody wanting you at all. Whereas he might fall under the radar, but he could end up being, you know, a nice sneaky find for someone that they're willing to take a bit of a flyer on. You look at a Cole Bishop. I mean, he's been outstanding since the minute he stepped on the field in 2021. Yeah. What else does he have left to prove? You might as well just go. If you get the draft grade, which he did, you might as well go and get that started. I think the decision was a lot harder for both Bishop and Sione than it was for Vaki. I think Vaki, or excuse me, for Vele.
Yeah, Devon.
I think Vele was pretty well. His mind was made up. And
we come on our radio station multiple times and said, "Guys, I'm 25 years old. I gotta do something."
Right, right. Yeah, I got to grow up sometime. But the other two, I think they sat and they weighed that a little bit more. Like I said, I know that for a while Cole was very 50-50, kind of on the fence. And I know Sione was actually planning on being back and then had a change of heart. I know everybody was talking about, oh, he's going to leave. That was never the impression that I got, that he was going to bail and take off someplace else. I know that people were pushing really hard for him, but the general message was he was happy at Utah. And as long as the NIL was reasonable, he was good to stay there. But I think he got a draft grade that maybe he wasn't expecting to get. And so it was a no-brainer for him to go. His ultimate goal is to help his family. And he's going to have a lot better chance of doing that with NFL money than he is with NIL money.
Sure. Now, okay, on the NIL front, yes, I've been talking with some people. Utah, they are close to maxing out what they have currently. Now, in this day and age of NIL, Michelle, and this is the conversation I was having with somebody about this very topic, is that each one of these universities have these collectives set up, and they have a certain amount of money, insert whatever amount of money that collective has. They have almost, in essence, like their own salary cap being imposed upon them. And this goes for BYU. This goes for Utah State. This goes for all of 133 FBS football programs around the country. They have a certain amount of money they can utilize. And you have to spread it around. Mm-hmm. You have to kind of prioritize who you think, okay, who is our top echelon of players, and insert that there. So what is, if any, your concern level with the NIL situation for Utah and, the thought that, wow, they're almost maxed out on that?
I think, honestly, the biggest concern is what everybody else is doing.
Sure.
You know, it's if someone's willing to make an absolutely absurd offer on someone, you know, that there is just a point where Utah can't match that. Like, I think Utah's in a place where they can give good NIL.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, if we're talking about going toe to toe with like a USC or a Texas or and if they wanted to be super aggressive with it, you know, that's just a case where I unless the kid's smart and understands the developmental value of going to a place like Utah, it's something they're probably going to miss out on some guys that they really, really want. And that's unfortunate. And that's, again, kind of a case in point of something has to kind of be done because it's just a little too free and loose. But, you know, at the end of the day, I expect this coaching staff to figure out how to get people here that really want to be at Utah and again, see the value in being there. It won't be for everyone. You know, for some people, money rules all and wins out.
Money talks, yeah.
But at the end of the day, I do still think that they will ultimately find their guys.
Okay, and then so the other question I had on that front is, what's next for Utah? Is it like, are they focusing heavy on transfer portal? Because you talk about the developmental football program, mm-hmm. and I think that that's the right way to approach this. You want to bring in younger players, let them kind of grow up, and have the payoff when they reach their peak capacity as football players. I think BYU's endeavoring to kind of follow that same path. Granted, they're a little earlier on in their developmental process as a Power 5 football program, but what's the focus right now for Utah recruiting-wise?
I mean, obviously, it's to they still don't have like a ton of room to bring in guys.
Even with all the guys exiting
that have left. Yeah. Yes, exactly. My understanding of the situation is, you know, the signing class, the high school signing class, is looking to be about 10 or 11 guys. With some of the people that have left, that maybe opens up, you know, for a couple of surprises, perhaps.
Okay.
But I really kind of, I think, expect to see them use those spots with the transfer portal and find maybe guys that have a year or two left that can kind of plug and fill some spots and add some depth. Like I said, kind of raise the floor of the program. That, sure. I think that's really kind of what the focus is ultimately going to be.
All right. 1, 2, 4, or 5?
Let's go 5.
Okay, 5. BYU-Utah basketball today. Rivalry game up at the Huntsman Center. And I'm not going to lie, I'm actually really juiced for this. I think this has got a lot of juice around it because, yeah, BYU ranked 14th in the country, off to an 8-0 start on the season. But Utah, conversely, if you look at the KenPom ratings and whatnot, they're off to a really solid start themselves. Mm-hmm. 6-2, right, is mm-hmm. the record?
Yes.
So this is setting up for kind of the, I don't know, the last decade have been a lot of these games where you're like, okay.
Yeah.
But this one, it feels like in some ways it's back to what it was. Remember in the late 90s, early 2000s, where these basketball games were must-watch
TV.
Yeah. So what are you expecting tonight? Like, what are your feelings on it?
Well, I would also like to add, I think another thing that kind of is maybe adding a little more juice, a little more excitement, is that this is the last time that it's preseason
non-conference. Yeah.
That and I think, you know, there is a little bit of that energy of, well, we don't want to be the one on the losing side when it actually starts going,
sure.
you know, like we want to go in with the confidence of we got
correct.
That win today. So I think that's another just kind of interesting facet of this whole thing. You know, I honestly don't know what to expect because, as you mentioned, BYU is they're off to a flying start again. A lot of us didn't necessarily expect that, but that's where they're at, and they look legit doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But then on the other side, you know, I mean, I think Utah's looked a lot better than I think a lot of people were expecting them to. And the interesting thing is, at least the last time I checked, I think Utah's favored in the game to win the game, which is wild.
It's been going back and forth all week. Yeah.
So
no doubt.
It's, you know, I mean, that adds an area of intrigue. But then you have the mystery of Brandon Carlson. What is he going to play? Is he not going to play? I think that makes a huge, huge difference in this game, to be honest.
It would, yes.
You know, if Brandon's available, I expect it to be a close, hard-fought game. I'm not really sure I have a great feel on who comes out with it. But I think if they're going without Carlson, if he's not available, I think it could get ugly really quick, to be perfectly honest. I think he's that big of a difference maker for Utah.
Why is that? Like, what? It just is. I don't know.
I think he's just someone you have to account for, right? He can get hot scoring. It's not that often that you see guys his size that can hit the three the way that he can.
His ability to play inside out is really kind of, it stands in stark contrast to a lot of big men in college hoop. You're right.
Totally. And then I think, you know, especially when you get him out and pair him with like Kaba Keita,
who, by the way, had a really, really,
really
good performance.
Nice, yeah, the other night. He was really impressive. But then you start having some defensive issues, you know, they're a defensive problem together. So I think, again, he's just someone that has to be accounted for kind of in all phases.
Okay. So let me add one thing here. I have watched every BYU basketball game. I have watched, of the 8 Utah games, I think I've seen 6 of them so far this season. The one thing I can say about this game that I feel like it's going to, everything's going to change, is that Utah's perimeter defense, they have to keep BYU off of their spots. If you allow Jackson Robinson, Trevin Nell, Dallin Hall, et cetera, from BYU to go where they want to go on the court, get the shots they want to get on the court, at the, and by the way, the way that they're shooting right now, and that's one thing Utah has struggled with, is perimeter defense. If you allow BYU to get to their spots and take their shots,
it's going to get ugly. It will get ugly.
And that's the interesting part about this game to me, because I'm with you. The Brandon Carlson mystery, we're sending him out with the thought of playing Saturday. Then Craig Smith comes out in postgame and says, well, we'll see how it goes. Yesterday, I think similar type comments.
Yeah, it was a similar type of comment.
I think he's sandbagging.
I think so too. I really, unless Brandon Carlson's missing a leg, he's not missing this game, you know?
See, I'm with you. That's my thought too. I'm like, this is a kid who grew up in this state. Apparently him and Trevin Nell were AAU teammates growing up. And Trevin was talking about that. He's like, I'm going to text him and get some trash talk going back and forth. I'm like, great, good for you. But I don't see a way that Brandon Carlson wants to miss this game unless he's quite literally not able to
go. Yeah, maimed in some way.
that's beside the point, is that I've seen enough of this, and I've been watching these games, and trust me, I am far from the biggest college basketball fan in the world. I think the NBA is a superior product, just in terms of entertainment value, but I've watched the Utes, and I'm interested to see if they can defend the perimeter, keep BYU, because BYU wants to shoot 30-plus threes a game. Mark Pope is unabashed in saying that. They had the game here at the Delta Center last Friday against Fresno State. He said, yeah, we got 29 up. He was talking about one of the backups. Like, I wish you would have pulled the trigger to get to our 30 mark. And I'm like, wow, you are like really.
You're aggressive on that.
Yeah, but that's what it's been all season long. BYU's whole mentality with this new offense they're kind of running here is it's very kind of an NBA-esque mentality. And what it is, you get to the rim or you shoot the three. Like they're all in on these analytics, the metrics, and that's a lot of what the NBA has revolutionized. Like either you're going to the rim or you're taking it from the outside, because the numbers is how that shakes out. So that's the issue I have is, yes, you're right that you need Brandon Carlson and Kaba Keita to defend the interior, and playing at the same time it can also cause its own issues.
Yeah.
But then you have to have the other guys on the perimeter. They've got to be able to get BYU off their spots. If they don't, this is a double-digit win for BYU, it feels like.
Totally. I would agree with that. That's funny that you brought up BYU being an NBA-styled team, because Craig Smith brought it up yesterday.
And Craig Smith, I think he is starting to realize it with his analytics, too. They have these analytics guys on their staff, and they're looking at the numbers, and they're like, okay, where's the most efficient way to get points? Well, three-pointers and going to the rim. So I'm not saying that BYU is revolutionary in this. I just know that Mark Pope has been very outspoken about it. Craig Smith, you mentioned similar comments yesterday. It's smart. Why wouldn't you be doing this?
Oh, totally. I mean, just ask Kyle Whittingham, the analytics king.
Where's that white book when I need it?
Yeah, he has a whole notebook
a binder. It's the best part, because you see, Jeff Rudy used to carry it. I don't know who carries it now.
I'm not sure who carries it either.
You'd see him kind of wander over to Kyle during a critical part of the game, like pull open the chapter that they needed to get to. Kyle looks at it, nods his head, and they close it, and off they go.
The analytics Bible, man. Analytics play a huge, huge part in what coaches in just about any sport do these days. You can crunch. Again, I think we talked about this last week, where there's a reason why I'm a writer, and it's because I do not maths well.
You don't maths well? I like that.
But there are people like Ken Palm that can crunch numbers and figure things out and see patterns and these coaches are now starting to figure that out and use that to their advantage. And why wouldn't you? If the numbers are telling you that something is advantageous, why would you not do it?
Yeah, and that's the thing about this, is the KenPom numbers indicate this could be a really, really fun game. Like if you want to go simply by the analytics, and KenPom, we had him on the show last week, his analytics, and BYU is among the tops in his, I think they're number six. I just pulled it up. So they're number six in the KenPom ratings. But if you look at the matchup, and Utah is currently 39, so they're both top 40. Those are very, very good numbers in the KenPom world. But he said the head-to-head matchup indicate this is a pretty tight one. I'm just looking up some of the sports books and whatnot. It's ranging anywhere from Utah to being a slight favorite, like a point, point and a half, to BYU as many as 4-point favorites. So this has got a pretty...
The makings of an exciting game.
We'll see. It's going to be interesting. So on the basketball front, coming up next, we're going to stay with the basketball thing. We're going to talk with Ben Anderson. He's, of course, the Utah Jazz insider for KSLSports.com. Utah Jazz last night allowed Kawhi Leonard to go off. 41 points. They lose to the Los Angeles Clippers. And a season that seems like it's teetering, if not already off the rails, seems like it's just starting to slide even further. We'll get Ben's thoughts on that coming up next. This is the Saturday Show on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Under the octopus with the steely bones, ancient goblins and wild lows. Welcome back to the Saturday Show here on 97.5, the KSL Sports. I'm Michelle Bodkin there, Jake Hatch here, and we are pleased to welcome in now Ben Anderson. Actually, typically he's sitting in Michelle's seat during this time period throughout the week from 10 to noon. He's one of the co-hosts of Jake and Ben, as well as the Utah Jazz insider for KSLSports.com. Ben, thanks for taking some time on the Saturday morning. How are you, my friend?
Good. Happy to jump on.
Absolutely. So I want to start here. Last night, Utah Jazz in action against the Los Angeles Clippers. If I'm not mistaken, you correct me if I'm wrong here, it's the final game technically of the in-season tournament for the Utah Jazz. I guess it's consolation play in a way. Give me your thoughts on how things went. Kawhi Leonard went off and the Jazz fall once again.
Yeah, the Jazz have been the victim of two big-time superstar performances in their last two games. Yeah. Obviously, Luka Doncic had the 29-point triple-double in the first half and finished with 40 points. And then Kawhi had 41 last night. So the Jazz right now, certainly without Lauri Markkanen, aren't really equipped to deal with those types of superstar-level games. And even when Lowry's been out there this year, the Jazz really have not been able to compete in that. So when these teams are healthy and engaged and playing at that level, those are games I don't think the Jazz are really going to win very often this year.
What is it that's changed from last season to this season? Because I think everyone was expecting them to really struggle last year, and they didn't. And now this year, I think people were expecting them to kind of get better, and now they're struggling.
Yeah, I think Mike Conley was a much better parachute than people thought, where the Jazz had kind of jumped out of the plane by trading both Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell and thought, okay, well, they're just going to fall flat on the ground. And Mike Conley kind of slowly helped them fall to the ground. And then once they traded him in February, the team really kind of fell apart, and we didn't see it because they were resting Jordan Clarkson and Colin Sexton was hardly playing and Lauri Markkanen and Mitch missed a bunch of games late. So we didn't realize exactly how bad the roster was or how poor they were going to perform when they were fully healthy this year and back out there. And then on top of it, they've just had some guys who I think have been slightly disappointing. I think Walker Kessler is not playing as well as people had expected and even as well as he had at times last year. And I don't know if that's just a sophomore slump or if he just had a big rookie season. But there are things like that. Jordan Clarkson's not as good this year as he was last year. That have really hurt the Jazz. And they're just terrible on the road. I mean, that's one of the other issues. They're young, and they can't win on the road. In fact, they're the worst road team in the NBA now after the Rockets won in Denver last night. So they've got the worst net rating away from home. They have 10 losses, which is the most away from home. They've got only one win, which is tied for the fewest. So they are just not a very good team, certainly when they're playing away from Salt Lake City.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, Ben, I think two of their next 10 or so are at home. The rest of those on their road. So that's the kind of recipe for disaster right now.
Yeah, Monday they're in Oklahoma City, who's been very good. They're a top three team in the West right now. They do play the Knicks, I think they
Correct.
Get for a home
yes.
game, and the Knicks are going to make the playoffs in the East. And then, they've got that big six-game road trip or five-game road trip, which they ought to be able to pick up some wins because they play in both San Antonio and Detroit, who are the two worst teams in each division. But the Jazz, truthfully, are closer to the bottom of the West than they are even the 10th seed right now in the Western Conference. So when you assume they can get wins on the road, even against the worst teams in the league, like they've already lost to Memphis. They were Memphis's first home win of the season. They've lost to Portland and were down by 32 in the fourth quarter. So while I say they should snap, you know, this road losing streak that they're on and how bad they've been, it's actually not guaranteed because they've been so poor away from home.
So, I mean, big picture, looking ahead, what is the game plan here? Do you just let it be and continue to kind of struggle and be bad, or do you try and fix it and put something together that's maybe a little respectable?
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see. I mean, I don't think they're going to be this bad all year with this roster. I suspect when Lauri Markkanen comes back, maybe they can bounce back and start to play, you know, close to 500 basketball for a little while. But you don't want to finish the season, you know, what are they, 8 games under 500 right now? Honestly, that's just not good enough because you might end up being having, you know, the 11th worst record in the NBA, which if that's the case, you have to trade your first round pick to the Oklahoma City Thunder. So at some point, I think they are going to fully pull the plug on the season. They kind of did it last year in February when they traded Mike Conley and some of their other pieces, Jared Vanderbilt, Malik Beasley. They could do something similar in trading their veterans this year, and that could be anybody from Kelly Olynyk to Jordan Clarkson to Colin Sexton to Talen Horton-Tucker. We'll see who actually sticks around. But at some point, I think they will turn the ball over to, you know, Taylor Hendricks, who played a little bit last night, has been in the rotation for the last three games. Maybe even Bryce Sensabaugh comes up and gets some opportunities to play with the main roster. So it will happen eventually. I don't think this is the course they're going to stay on the rest of the year.
Now, Ben, you talk about a guy like Talen Horton-Tucker who could be a trade prospect. That we had Brian Gelzar, and you heard this clip, I know, we played it as a promo from my show for a week or so, about Brian Gelzar saying they had the trio of Chuckers, as he called them, for Talen Horton-Tucker, Jordan Clarkson, and names. But he said, Colin Sexton. Thank you, Christian. But he talked about the fact that it's kind of stifling, in a way, Keyonte George and his development here. Is Keyonte still doing what you expect him to do? Do you think it's going to be at some point he's going to hit that quote-unquote rookie wall?
Yeah, I think he's probably hit it in some ways. His shooting percentages are way down. His turnovers are up a little bit. His assists are way down after Lauri Markkanen left the rotation. So, you know, now the good news is Lowry's going to come back and some of those things should be easier for him. But I do think he's kind of hit that point where he may be so overwhelmed with what's going on the floor and so consumed with just like keeping his head above water that I'm not sure how much he's adding to his game every single night, where it felt like those first 10 games of the season, even those first five starts, like you saw something new every game that you hadn't seen previously. And that was really exciting to watch for Jazz fans. I'm not sure he's doing that so much now. It's just like, there's a scouting report on him. Teams know what to take away from him. They're guarding him differently than they used to. And now he's just trying to figure out how to not be, you know, in an overwhelming negative every night that he's on the floor. And this is not a knock on a rookie in Keyonte George. The Jazz aren't a very good team, and he's having to start at point guard. But he has one of the worst plus-minuses in the entire NBA for the full season. And, you know, that's been aided. He was minus 48 in Detroit or in Dallas the other night. He was minus 25 last night, which I think was the worst on the team. So he regularly has the worst plus-minus on the floor. And if he was, you know, 3, 4, 5 years in the league, I think that would be a bigger red flag. It's not in his rookie season. But you can see that, like, teams recognize that when he's on the floor, they're going to perform well. The Jazz are struggling when he's on the floor, even if the offense looks a little bit better. He just doesn't have some of the veteran experience and doesn't know all the tricks to, you know, make life a little bit easier on himself. And that's where had he gone to the G League, life would have been a little bit easier for him because he could have learned more things, continued to add things, which I've seen from Talen Horton-Tucker from his first game of the season where he was, you know, basically unplayable to now where I know he didn't score last night. He didn't really even record all that many statistics, but he actually wasn't like this huge negative when he was on the floor. He didn't make shots, but it wasn't like LA was able to just attack him and score on him every single time he was on the floor or he was turning the ball over. He actually wasn't that bad. So those are places where I think Keyonte George would have benefited from more experience. And as far as the rookie wall goes, I don't know if the bottom's ever going to totally fall out, but it feels like he's hit a minor plateau.
Will Hardy maybe had like the quote of the year. I'm still chuckling over that. Obviously can't say it on air. Was that one of the better coaches' comments, post-game comments you've ever heard in covering this team?
Yeah, I mean, I compared it to something, you know, something Frank Layden would have said. I mean, this has skipped several coaches. Quinn Snyder certainly was never that candid. He was kind of funny, but he never would say something like that. Mm-hmm. And Jerry Sloan was usually pretty serious. And, you know, Jerry was funny after big losses, too. You know, he had a very notorious quote after the Jazz lost by whatever it was, 36 or 40 to the Bulls in the finals, where he picked up the box score and he asked if that was the final box score, which was a very funny line in the finals of the worst loss of his career. But, yeah, that quote from Will Hardy is an all-timer. And, you know, I think he wasn't trying to be funny necessarily, which I think is good that he can call it out. But also, you know, we talked to him the next day at practice and he just said, you know, we've moved on. We're just, you know, there's not a whole lot you can take from that game. You just try and play the next game, the next outing. And actually, I thought the Jazz were better last night, certainly, than they were in Dallas.
Ben Anderson joining us, of course. Hosted Jake and Ben during this time slot during the week, Monday through Friday. He's also the Utah Jazz insider for KSLSports.com. All right, Ben, so you talk about the fact that you feel like at some point the Jazz may pull the plug on this because, yes, they do have the whole thought of, okay, do we want to convey that pick to Oklahoma City? Do you think that would come similar to what they did last year where they kind of pull it in February around the trade deadline? When do you think they would ultimately say, you know what, we're bagging this?
Yeah, and the Jazz kind of did it in steps last season. You know, January 3rd, Ochai Agbaji gets called up from the Stars and stays in the rotation for the rest of the year. And it's just kind of out there through, you know, thick and thin. They just played him, and he was a major rotation piece, even when they still had, you know, Mike Conley and still had Malik Beasley and still had Jared Vanderbilt. He was playing, and Walker Kessler was a full-time starter at that point. So that's, what, 3 weeks away from right now is that January 1st, January 3rd stretch where maybe they make the same switch where Taylor Hendricks comes up full-time and the Jazz say, you know, it doesn't really matter. They're eight to 10 games below 500, maybe even more, and they're not going to try and rebuild this season or get back to the playoffs. And so you would rather just have Taylor Hendricks out there. It's going to up fan interest. He's going to develop more when he's playing in the NBA if you can give him 20 minutes a night playing next to some of the better players in the league like Lauri Markkanen or Kelly Olynyk, and he can learn some of the tricks of playing with pros. You might see that as soon as January. And then, yeah, you know, you don't have to trade anybody until the trade deadline. So you can honestly just call around the league, see what's out there, and just say, hey, you know, X, Y, and Z player are available, or more likely in the Jazz scenario, like, hey, there's only three guys who we're not going to trade. Give us your best offer for everybody else. And if we think that's worth it, the trade deadline, they'll pull the trigger on those trades. I think we will see that where the team kind of fully unplugs close to the All-Star break, but I bet you start to see parts of it in January.
I know that we're kind of saying we think this team will eventually pull the plug, and that it's not really exactly a goal to be good this year. But in the future, what does this team have to do in order to get back on track, in order to be in the playoff conversation and maybe look more like the team that I think Jazz fans want them to look like?
Yeah, they need an identity, which they really don't have this year. And one of the things Will Hardy has said earlier this season, and it wasn't a shot at Lauri Markkanen, don't confuse me by saying that. It's just he kind of acknowledged that they don't have a real leader on this team. Mm-hmm. And they have lacked leadership this year, especially when they're on the road. And he had said this when Lauri Markkanen, I think, was in the lineup still, that, you know, that they don't know how to stop the bleeding in games yet. And they've actually asked Keontae George to do it in his first season. That's a lot to ask of a 20-year-old. When you have other guys who have made all-star teams and, you know, been around the league for 10 years or have made $100 million in their career, that's a lot to ask Keontae George. So they do need a leader. They need some more experience of guys who have made the playoffs. They tried to do this thing, I think, where, you know, Lowry's never made the playoffs. Colin Sexton's never made the playoffs. Jordan Clarkson's never been the best player on a playoff team, though he's made some playoff runs with the Jazz before. John Collins has really not done much in the playoffs ever in his career. So they've gone out and got a bunch of guys who haven't won at a high level but have produced and tried to see, I think, if that could build a winning team, and it hasn't so far. So you may have to go pick up some more winners and some more leaders to help you build your identity, and that's going to take veteran players. But honestly, if you're developing another top 10 pick this season in Taylor Hendricks and another one next year with whoever you draft this summer, you may even be drafting another top 10 pick next year. I mean, it just might be a couple of years before you're in that spot where you're competing.
All right, Ben. So now as the Jazz look, as Michelle lifted the lid on it, looking towards the future here, is there a player? I know that you do a lot of draft coverage. Have you started looking at draft stuff yet, or is it still too far in the future in your mind to start looking at draft prospects? I saw last night that Danny Ainge was apparently in Las Vegas watching guys like Cooper Flagg, who's part of the 2025 draft down there in Las Vegas. But are you already looking at the draft, or are you still holding off for now?
I will skim through it. I'm looking at a lot of the mock drafts that have come out. And the funny thing about this year's draft is, like, the top 10 is just totally different on everybody's
board.
It's
a jumbled mess. You're right. I've seen it, too.
Which is, you know, last year at this point, we knew Victor Wembanyama was going to be one. We assumed Scoot Henderson was going to go two. He ended up going three. And Brandon Miller was kind of starting to make his headway and start to push up to the top three, top four, top five. He ended up going number two overall. So we knew the Thompson twins were going to be up there as well. Like, we had a pretty good idea of what that top four, top five was going to look like. And it stayed pretty consistent all year. It was just a matter of the order of like Brandon Miller or Scoot. This year, it's just not like that at all. There's true debate at who's going to be number one. is that guy going to be available at 6? Is the guy at 10 going to be available at 4? Like, it's all over the place. So, honestly, I have not started watching these guys. And I prefer to watch them, honestly, at the end of the year, at the end of the college season. And there's even a couple of international guys this year and some G League Ignite guys. But I like to watch at the end of the year when I can pick a few specific games I want to see versus, you know, random December game against whatever opponent. So I really haven't watched it yet. And I think it's going to be difficult for fans who do try and put together, you know, their idea of who they'd like to see the Jazz draft, because it's going to change so much between now and June.
All right. Well, Ben, appreciate all your coverage, all the work you're doing over at KSLSports.com, and obviously what you're doing with Jake. By the way, is he still treating you well? I know that I see you guys every day, but is he still being nice to you?
He never has, and he never will.
Okay, fair enough. All right. Well, that's what we like to hear. All right, Ben, thanks for taking the time. We'll talk with you soon, all right?
See you guys. Thanks.
There you go. Ben Anderson, KSLSports.com. Track all of his Jazz coverage. Him and Jake, they actually do a really fun show. I hear most of it most days because I'm here doing post-prod and whatnot from DJ and PK. And they keep it light. That's mm-hmm. the fun part about it. They still have a lot of fun with it at the same time. All right. We will come back on the other side. We will get to technical fouls, talk about some of the things going on in the sports world of a less savory nature, just downright stupid. We'll get to all that coming up next. This is the Saturday Show on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
If you're coming from the street with dirty shoes on your feet, that's a technical foul. If you switch the radio to some modern music show, that's a technical foul. If you touch the thermostat,
you'll get hit with a bat.
Cause that's a technical foul.
You won't feel my wrath.
That's a technical foul.
Personal file, 69, office. He was giving them the business.
A technical foul.
Welcome back to the Saturday Show here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. All right, it is time now for technical fouls. Talk about some of the more frivolous things, I guess I should say, in the sports world. Michelle, I'm going to give you a first dibs this week. Where are you going?
Okay. So, two-time world darts champion Dennis Priestley revealed
darts. All right, here we go.
He wouldn't have won his first world title had he not sunk four bottles of Holsten Pilsner before his finals, and claims that drinking before games helps the players. First of all, can we stop calling games
sports?
Sports. I'm looking at you, darts and bowling and poker, not sports. They're games. Thank you. On top of that, I mean, where most dart boards are in a bar, I guess I'm not entirely surprised. But also, does that not feel like a little dangerous having all these so-called athletes getting schnockered before their game with sharp, pointy things, throwing sharp pointy things?
Okay, here's the thing. People that play darts, they're supremely talented.
They are.
Because their ability to hit these spots on those dartboards is incredible. But the whole thought of him winning his first title after kicking back four Pilsners, yeah, we can settle that debate and say, yeah, that's a game, it's not a sport.
Totally. Thank you.
Yeah, it just doesn't square up, it feels like, in my mind.
Technical foul.
Yeah, technical foul, no doubt. All right. And by the way, that'll always, the whole thing about darts will always bring me back to that famous scene in Ted Lasso of him talking about his dad.
Oh, yeah.
And him sticking it to Rupert. Awesome. Awesome scene, by the way. And a great life lesson at the same time, too.
Yes.
All right. Christian, what do you got for us this week?
I'll go with good old Mitch Trubisky.
Oh, we're going back to Thursday Night Football?
Thursday Night Football. Oh. First off, it was a stinker of a game. I mean,
okay,
the Patriots were 2-10 coming in. Yeah. They dominated the first half, but then they didn't score at all in the second half.
Oh, brutal.
The Steelers were supposed to be a playoff team. They trot out Trubisky with Kenny Pickett hurt,
mm-hmm.
and they just look lifeless out there. Anyways, you know, it's 4th-and-2, just over 2 minutes left. Steelers are down by 3. Mm-hmm. They're at midfield. 4th-and-2, Mitch Trubisky takes a 40-yard shot down the field. All they need is the first down. The game is on the line, and it's just one of my biggest pet peeves in football is, I mean, no situational awareness. Like,
oh yeah,
just get down.
The first down.
No time. You know the down. Like you're right. Situational awareness severely. I remember I was like, what are you doing?
I don't
doing
remember
here?
How many timeouts they had left, but they had the 2-minute warning left. They mm-hmm. had plenty of time on the clock, but instead they essentially give the game away.
Yeah, they handed it away.
They ended up, the defense ended up forcing a three and out, and they got the ball back, but it was too little too late. But I'm also, I mean, head coach Mike Tomlin, after the game, he wasn't critical of the decision. He said something like, we like to be aggressive. We like to go for the win. And I just...
Cool, do it on third down then.
You already fired your offensive coordinator this year.
Yeah, your playoff spot is on the line. Uh-huh. You need to win with your backup quarterback. This is a game that you should have won. It was a crappy opponent, a 2-10 team. You lost to the 2-10 Cardinals last week. And it baffles me, man.
Yeah, no doubt about that. The thing about it is it's a really, really it's one of those things you're like, okay, really, you can defend it all you want, but behind closed doors, are you really defending it? I don't think so.
Better not be.
Yeah. All right. Mine real quick. So just see the whole hullabaloo yesterday about Shohei Ohtani?
No.
So he's the biggest free agent on the market in Major League Baseball.
Like, okay.
Everybody wants this guy. He's going to make a gazillion dollars. It's going to be 500 plus million, it feels like, wherever he decides to go. Well, John Morosi reported that there was a plane leaving from Southern California going to Toronto, and the Blue Jays apparently are one of Shohei's finalists, if you believe the reports, like one of the teams that's in the running to get him. Well, all of a sudden, Toronto Blue Jays fans are like flight tracker central.
Goodness.
And,
okay.
And then Bob Nightingale, who is one of the more well-respected reporters out there, columnist, that type of stuff on baseball, says he's not in Toronto. He's home in Southern California. What is going on here? And then John Morosi, late last night, gets back on his Twitter feed after letting it sit there for 7 hours. His original report that caused all of this to erupt says, I'm sorry, I made a mistake, and hope you guys will forgive me.
Oh, no. No, you got to be sure if you're throwing crap like that out.
Because here's the thing. Flight tracker stuff works. In college sports, you do it all the time. But
thinking about Andy Ludwig last year.
But Michelle, let me make the point here. That Roger Sherman made this point. That's why I subscribe to it. Roger Sherman, who does a lot of stuff with college football, he's been on that road trip all season long.
Mm-hmm.
Makes a very good point, because college programs are in out-of-the-way places. When
that
a plane leaves for Stillwater, Oklahoma, or it's going to South Bend, Indiana, or Starkville, Mississippi,
something's up. Something's happening.
You can track that. A flight from the greater Orange County, Los Angeles area going to Toronto—
could be anything.
There's 15 gazillion of those, it feels like, relatively. So—
Yeah, that's maybe not a method for pro sports.
Yeah, Major League Baseball and flight tracker, not necessarily a thing. College sports, still kind of a thing. And still can be wrong, but you can...
Yeah, it's a little easier to narrow down that something might be happening.
This plane's leaving from L.A. and going to Toronto. Okay, what about the 15 other ones that are leaving in the next hour for that same exact flight pattern? Just whatever.
It's fun, though, because it's been a while in any sport since we've had a free agent of that level.
Sure, and trust me, everybody and their dog, baseball-wise, is trying to get the scoop on this. Apparently, Shohei's team around him has essentially said, if you guys go out and start like leaking stuff, you're out of the running. Like, they've like shut this down. Like, it is locked down. It's airtight how they're handling business here.
A mystery.
We know that the Dodgers have met with him because their manager said at their winter meetings that they had a meeting with him in L.A. Apparently, he flew to Florida to meet with the Blue Jays brass. But other than that, we don't have much on anything with regards to Shohei. But funny enough, the Yamamoto guy who's coming over from Japan, mm-hmm. he's apparently the number two free agent. And between him and Shohei, who are both Japanese national stars, they could collectively sign contracts worth $1 billion between the two of them this offseason.
How do I get me some of that? After the flight tracker debacle on this sounds like a case for Scooby-Doo and the gang, you know?
Yeah. all right, so I got one other one. Let's hear it. So Zion Williamson, obviously, phenomenal basketball player. Did you see this report, though? coming from Pelicans reporter Christian Clark. Quote, Williamson's poor work ethic has been a source of frustration for the Pelicans since they drafted him number one in 2019. The Pelicans have tried to surround Williamson with veterans who have track records of maximizing their potential. They signed J.J. Redick in 2019. In 2022, they traded for C.J. McCollum. None of it has made an impact. The Pelicans have repeatedly stressed to Williamson that his diet and conditioning need to improve. And Williamson, multiple team sources have told the Times-Picayune, quote, doesn't listen, unquote.
Sounds like a situation that Utah football had just last year. I will not specifically call anyone out, but
you can put the two.
You can put the two together. Yeah. It's not that hard.
But here's the thing about this: Zion Williamson has all world talent.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, this is not. Trust me, I think of BYU football players who have had this issue. Like, the problem is this guy has the capability of making generational wealth and having a career that could be very, very fruitful for him, but he's got to hone it in. Now, he is currently on a he's on a 5-year potential $231 million max contract extension right now. He's only played in 85 games in his first 3 years of his career. Now, a lot of that's been due to injury, but there's a lot of people who are concerned that his height to weight ratio, and he's already not just a naturally big dude. Mm-hmm. There's been comparisons of him to guys like Karl Malone and whatnot.
Yeah.
But there's a big difference. Remember Karl Malone, we know this as Utah Jazz fans. That dude was relentless.
Yoked.
He did those workouts. Do you remember those videos, Michelle? You were my age. You remember the workouts that he did in the shed in Louisiana and filmed them where he had no air conditioning and it's 100 degrees in the summer?
No, I'm going to have to look those
up.
Oh,
they're
That sounds hysterical.
They're legendary because Carl he's just sweating everything, but he's working all the time. That's the thing. I don't know if the team can't get through to Zion, who's going to get through to him?
You know what that honestly sounds like to me? I think they're targeting the wrong problem. That sounds like a mental health issue to me.
It very well could be.
And unfortunately, unless he realizes that and wants the help, there's not a whole lot you can do about that.
Sure. According to this, so the point that Williamson said, it's aforementioned max contract or an extremely small sample that includes a weight clause in it. It reported that he has periodic weigh-ins throughout the course of the deal, and if his body weight plus body fat percentage were to go above $295, he could lose money as part of that deal. So the team has got it built into his contract here. But it feels like this is a guy, trust me, he was a sensation from the time he was 14 years old.
Yeah.
I remember seeing him on Instagram. He's throwing on these just monster nuggets. And he does this all the time in the NBA, too. But got to hone in a little bit here. And it's unfortunate. So hopefully he figures it out. Because he's got the talent to be one of the really, really good players of this upcoming generation of players.
Yeah. No, it's always sad to see really talented people struggle. And like I said, usually that seems to be a mental health issue.
And that's something that's got to be addressed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting debate there because this is a kid who's thought to be one of the preeminent players of this younger generation of NBA stars. We'll see if he can figure it out. All right. We are over time. We'll come back on the other side. So I have a couple of topics I want to get to. I'll have you pick from those. We'll get to those coming up. I got 1, 2, and 4, I think, still remaining. We'll get to all those coming up next. This is the Saturday Show on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.